Now, if you've driven past the convention center this week, you may have noticed the signboard announcing that it's busy hosting the Congress of the World Veterinary Association. This gathering has brought together veterinary experts from all over the world to discuss issues around animal health and well-being, everything from advances in diagnostics and treatment to the impact of animal health on human health, the history of veterinary medicine, and much, much more. It's a really varied and interesting program. And I know the South African Veterinary Association is very proud to be hosting all these global experts of such caliber. We're grateful to them for helping to set up two conversations with two of the conference speakers. On the show tomorrow, we'll focus on the fight to eradicate rabies. But for today, I want to focus on the growing problem of obesity in pets and the health challenges it presents, as well as strategies for managing it. It's my pleasure to have with us on the line Dr. Heather Bacon, who is the Dean of the Veterinary School at the UK's University of Central Lancashire. Now, she has a passion for veterinary education. She's worked all over the world and with leading universities and animal welfare groups to improve the welfare of not just pets, but also wild and captive animals. And her research interests include changing human behaviour to improve the welfare of animals. I suspect that's going to be a very significant factor in our conversation today, because we humans are, of course, the gatekeepers of many of the habits which can lead to or prevent obesity in our pets. Heather, it's wonderful to have you with us on the show. Welcome to Cape Town and welcome to Cape Talk.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you. We know obesity in humans is measured by the yardstick of the BMI, the body mass index. How do you actually measure it or assess it in pets, Heather?
We actually have a similar tool. We use a technique called body condition scoring, or BCS, and that rates the animal on a scale of either 1 to 5 or 1 to 9, where 1 is very, very thin, and 5 or 9, depending on the scale that's used, is obese. And so we assign that pet a numerical value, and we have specific scales for both cats and dogs.
Okay. I know human doctors all over the world have been voicing alarm at what they see as soaring rates of obesity in humans. Is the same happening in the world of pets?
Yes, it really is. In fact, most studies indicate that around 40 to 50% of pets are overweight or obese.
Gosh.
And that trend seems to be increasing in our pets, just as it is in people. So, yeah, it's absolutely a real problem for us.
And are the factors the same? We know for many humans, it's a combination of poor dietary choices, of very sedentary lifestyles, but also in the same breath, there can be genetic factors at play. Do the same sort of complicating factors appear in the pet obesity problem?
Yes, it's a really complex picture. We certainly see some of those similarities. So we know that people who are sedentary and have pets are more likely to have pets who have weight problems, which is what you would expect to see. But we also know that a lot of the weight problems we see in our pets actually comes across because of how much people care about them. We show our love through food. And if we think about how we celebrate with our family, our friends, food plays an important role in many different cultures and situations. Mm. And so we show love through food, and that's absolutely how we demonstrate it to our pets as well.
It's such an interesting phenomenon, Heather, because as you say, you're trying to show affection and your love for your pet. And it's natural to say, well, I want to spoil them with a little something that they're going to gobble up and enjoy, whether it's a piece of roast chicken or whatever it is that you've set aside for them. But it's not what they're meant to be eating. And Heather, let's talk about the side effects of particularly the role of poor diet and the problems that allowing our pets to become overweight and obese might result in. Like humans, we see problems with the heart, problems with the lungs, problems with many body systems, don't we?
That's right, yes. In cats in particular, we see challenges that are metabolic, so things like diabetes, for example, and also an increase in urinary tract inflammation. Mm-hmm. In our dogs, we also see things like dental disease, and in both dogs and cats, arthritis and painful conditions as animals age are exacerbated by that extra weight, just as you would see in people.
Isn't it awful to think that something we might be doing, thinking we are doing our pet a favour, is actually potentially setting them up for pain and discomfort? Heather, it's a very difficult thing, I would imagine, to engage with the human when they present with the pet in a practice and you have to say to them, look, your dog or cat is seriously overweight and you've got to stop spoiling them and doing the thing which feels like a display of love? Is it about managing the human psychology as much as it is managing the physical well-being of the animal?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, as veterinary professionals now, we do have a greater understanding of that interconnectedness and the importance of the human-animal bond. I think there are many ways in which pet owners can show their love, but that are more sustainable and healthier for their pets. So if your cat is meowing at you, rather than reaching for the food bowl, try and play with your pet for a little bit, or give them some affection, scratch them behind the ears. Similarly with your pet dogs, if you enjoy showing your love by feeding them, think about how you can make that a longer lasting interaction by using things like puzzle feeders, or try and get out and about, even if it's just for a very short walk, to increase your daily activity. And that has mutual health benefits for both you and your pet.
Absolutely, a win-win, yeah. I just want to say, for anybody who's come in late to the conversation, our guest is Dr. Heather Bacon, who is a visiting vet and a very highly qualified one at that, the Dean of the Veterinary School at the University of Central Lancashire, here in South Africa, to take part in the Congress of the World Veterinary Association, where she's presenting a paper on the subject of pet obesity. Heather, let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics. Are certain breeds of dogs and cats more prone to developing weight problems? I'm asking the question as a former English bulldog owner, from a place of deep personal experience of this one.
Yes, we do tend to see some breed predisposition. So we have more evidence in our dogs than we do in our cats. But certainly breeds that have that more extreme conformation, so the flat face breeds like bulldogs, yep, or French bulldogs or pugs, they often have less tolerance for exercise, just because they do have that challenge with their breathing. And that can then exacerbate their ability to regulate and maintain their weight at a healthy level. But we do also see challenges with dogs like golden retrievers and Labradors as well. So, you know, it is a multifactorial problem.
Yeah. And it can get out of hand quite quickly and easily. Heather, I just anecdotally, I'm thinking back to dropping my dog off with the pet sitter who was looking after her for a week while we were away. And when we came back to fetch her, her opening comment was, gosh, Shella really loves her food. And my heart sank because I knew what was about to walk around the corner. And in the space of just a few days, there was a really noticeable impact on her weight gain just from having been overfed by somebody who, with the best of intention, saw that this dog loved her food, so kept on giving her more of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, the quality of food available to us these days is so scientifically improved. We are seeing so many options. There are breed-specific diets available. There's raw food. There's so much innovation going on in this space. You would think that it would be easier to manage, but Heather, from what you've told us, the problem's getting worse, not better. Does the quality of the food play a big role?
We have many more tools for regulating diets now. So we do have foods that, as well as being high quality nutritional foods for dogs and cats that need that higher energy input, we also do have diets that are metabolically constructed to support weight loss and improve feelings of satiety in pets.
Okay.
So they're a really good option for people who are looking to reduce the calorie intake for their pets without wanting to feel as if they're making their pet hungry or starving. So we do have many more tools now, but it is important that regardless of what you choose to feed, that it's a high quality nutritional diet that meets your pet's needs, and also that you feed the recommended amount, and that you consider the addition of treats into the pet's overall calorie intake. Because quite often it is those extra little treats and snacks that add up over time.
As they do for us humans, I have to say. Heather, let's talk a little bit about other factors that might add to the propensity to put on the extra weight. For example, does gender or sterilization status play any role in this sort of the tendency towards obesity?
Yes, it absolutely can do. So we do know that there is a connection between neutering, so spaying or neutering your male or female dog or cat, and metabolic changes, which can then influence weight gain. So we do tend to see a reduction in active muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that dogs and cats who have been spayed or neutered do tend to burn around 25% less calories. And that means they're more predisposed to putting on weight. So again, if you have a pet that's been neutered, then that regular gentle exercise is really important for maintaining their muscle activity and also for controlling their weight, as well as a calorie-controlled diet. And we do see, even regardless of spay or neuter status, we do see that female dogs tend to be more predisposed to putting on weight than male dogs. And again, that's likely a result of the impact of the differing hormones between the sexes.
Thank you for that. One of our listeners asking about the role of milk in the diet. Obviously, we all know that when they're born, they will have mother's milk. But the question is whether milk has any place in the diet of even a kitten or puppy, or should it be eliminated?
Yeah, so dairy milk, the milk that we would generally drink from cows, has quite a different formulation to puppy or kitten milk. So we generally suggest that owners don't feed that because it's not very digestible for puppies and kittens. You can get kitten milk as a commercial product, and that can be nice as a treat. But again, it does tend to be very high calorie. So you do need to be thinking of that in terms of the overall diet. As dogs and cats get older, they don't have the ability to digest lactose, and actually dairy milk can cause stomach upsets in some pets. So whilst additions such as, you know, various aspects of sort of human food can be a treat for some pets, it's really important that they're only used very sparingly or occasionally, and also that owners are aware of any potential toxicity issues or items which might cause upset stomachs as well.
We always hear that chocolate is very potentially dangerous to dogs. Is that urban legend or is that true, Heather?
No, that's absolutely true. So chocolate contains a chemical called theobromine, and in large quantities, and particularly in dark chocolate, that can be highly toxic to dogs.
Right.
And it can cause really severe illness and in some cases even death. So if your dog has access to human chocolate, it's really important that you seek advice from a veterinary surgeon.
Thank you for that. Are there any other sort of fairly common human foods that you're aware people might be tempted to feed to a pet as a treat without realizing that it's potentially dangerous to them?
Yes, so as well as chocolate, we also can see problems with raisins or even grapes. And again, in dogs, that's particularly can be a problem. That's quite an interesting toxicity because we still don't know exactly what the chemical is that causes that toxicity. It seems to affect some dogs, but not others. So it can be quite unpredictable. And that means it can sometimes take owners by surprise, but it can cause quite severe illness.
Okay, so please steer clear of the raisins and grapes as well as the chocolate. An absolute no-no. Thanks for that. Now, Heather, let's wrap up by asking what we need to do as owners to keep our eyes on this. Obviously, being mindful of the quality of diet we're feeding the dog, and as you've said, that recommended quantity, and being sure that we are including treats and extras within that calculation. Making sure that they get lots of regular gentle exercise being one. What are the sort of the warning signs that things are going wrong? Is there a way to check whether our dog is or dog or cat is at a suitable weight, or an indicator that's easy to spot that things are getting out of hand?
Yes, absolutely. So you can look online and find body condition score charts for your pet dog or cat. And these are really nice visual charts that you can use as a pet owner to assess where your dog or cat might sit on that scale, and will give you an indication of whether he or she is in a healthy weight range or not. And many veterinary practices, veterinary clinics, will also offer free weight consultations or allow you to go in and weigh your pet on a regular basis. That's obviously more practical often for dogs than for cats.
Yeah.
But that regular connection can also help just with that monitoring and making sure that things aren't creeping up on you, because it is often a gradual change.
Heather, you've been so helpful and full of information. Thank you very much for making time in what I know is a very busy schedule at the Congress. We so appreciate your joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to chat.
You too. Dr. Heather Bacon, Dean of the Veterinary School at the University of Central Lancashire in the United Kingdom.